So this table up here that is part of our fixture for this Advent season, it's special to me because this is the table we've used as our dining room table for the last 10 plus years. Ever since we moved back from New Zealand, we bought it used, and it's been a great table. We didn't even have to pay that much for it. It was a great thing. But the table itself is an interesting thing. And I don't know about you, but my memories growing up and my Christmas memories, almost all of them involved a table, right? And about eating together and being together as family or friends or whatever, the people we gather around to celebrate. There's something special about being around the table. And thank you for that great testimony earlier. I feel like I don't even have to preach after that. What a powerful message of hope. And yet, we have this table set. And today it's set for two, but really, we're going to talk about how the king's table is infinite. There is no limit to how many can be at the king's table. In this series, this Advent season, we're going to think about what it means to be part of the king's table, a table of hope, peace, joy, and love. And so what are your memories? What do you remember about your childhood growing up, or even just last year or recent years, sitting around the table? Yeah, you know, I wrote about it in my weekly word. I've got to go down here and get my remote because I forgot it. But I wrote about it that many new homes, and actually Rick spoke about this a few weeks ago when he shared, many new homes are being built without a dining room. We're getting away from sitting around a table. And it's becoming a thing of the past. But I don't know about you, I don't want to lose that. That's an important part of what it means to be family. In fact, many smaller apartments don't even have room for a table. We just eat in front of a TV or on a couch or those things. But there's something special about gathering together for a meal. And so I want us to think about that as sort of a metaphor this season about invitation and the invitation to the table. What does it mean to come together to a table in fellowship with one another? Because when you're invited to a table, you're invited in. You're part of that home. You're part of that family. Even if it's just for a time, you are invited into relationship. Now, there's not a lot of tables in the Christmas story, and that's okay, but there is a lot of what this table represents. Because Christmas is about an invitation. It's actually about an arrival of the King of Kings in the form of an infant that would create this opportunity and this invitation to the king's table. See, it's actually his friendship, his relationship with us that makes us worthy to sit at the king's table. And so Christmas is not just a celebration of the arrival of Christ, it's a celebration that we know leads to Easter, leads to the culmination of what that is all about. And so Advent is about this incarnation, this moment where Christ not is just born, but he chooses to be born. And this is an important part for this series as we think about what it means to be at the Christmas table, is that we remember that Christ chose to be born. Look at John 1, 10 to 14. It says, he came into the very world he created. Right? This is an act of his will. He came into the very world that he created, that the Lord of the universe would come and be flesh among us. He actually enters into the human condition, and it's essentially diseased, fallen state, and experiences it with his people. But the world didn't recognize him. We know the story. We know that they crucified him, right? He came to his own people, and even they rejected him. But to all who believed him and accepted him, he gave the right to become children of God. It's an important truth that we think about, that we have been given the right to become children of God. And when it says you have the right to become a child of God, that's what Jesus is. You're brought into the family. They are reborn, not with a physical birth resulting from human passion or plan, but a birth that comes from God. Jesus is born out of the will of God, which is his own will. And so he chooses to be born. So the Word, God, when there's a capital W, that means Jesus, the Word, became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. And we have seen his glory, the glory of the Father, the Father's one and only Son. And so if you look at something Augustine wrote way back when. I paraphrase a little bit because it's a little bit old-fashioned in its wording, but he says that Jesus was not born without choice. None of us are born because we choose it, right? None of us die when we choose to. He was born when he chose it. This is what's different about Jesus than us. He died when he chose it. He was born of a virgin how he chose it, and he dies on the cross the way he chose. See, we can't choose whether to be born or anything. The only one who chooses birth, who chose to be born, was Jesus. And so Christmas is a celebration of that birth. And the thing about Jesus is that he comes to our door. We read at the end of the book, right? You can jump to the end of the story in Revelation. He says, I stand at the door and knock, and if you hear my voice and you open the door, I will come in and we will share a meal together as friends. And so the invitation as we start this series is to the king's table. We are invited by Jesus. But isn't it interesting that if you read the idea of being invited to the king's table is all throughout Scripture. And we could spend an hour just going through all the Scriptures to talk about coming to the king's table. But this one, in the end, he comes to your door and he knocks. And what happens is that your table becomes the king's table. And so this Christmas season, this Advent, I want us to think about the table figuratively and metaphorically as the king's table. And I want you to think of your home table, even just right now. Imagine your home table, whatever it looks like and wherever it is. And just remember that because Christ comes with us and lives in us and dwells among us, because he came and he died and he rose again and he lives in us, that our table is the king's table. Your table at home is the king's table. It doesn't have to be perfect. In fact, I thought maybe I should just have a really messy table up here, like mine looks like a lot of the time. You know, should have taken a picture of our table this morning, and it certainly didn't look like this. And if you're anything like us, you know, the table can become a place where everything piles up and becomes, but it's a special place. And Jesus wants to be part of that place. He wants to come to your table and be part of your life. And so this morning, this first message is about the table of hope, the Christmas table, because Advent week one, the theme is hope, as you've been hearing through our message and through the testimonies and through the lighting of the hope candle. And so today we talk about the king's table of hope. And so what does it mean to come to the table of hope? We're going to look at an Old Testament story that has nothing to do with Christmas in a sense, but the truth is everything in the Bible points toward Christmas and Easter, right? Everything, this is the center of all the action. It's the crux of the story of Scripture, is Jesus' birth, life, death, and resurrection. And so as we celebrate Christmas, as we look at the Advent season, it's really what follows it and continues on through to Easter and Lent and all of that celebration. That's the whole message of Christ in a nutshell. And so this season, we're going to think about what it means to be anticipating all of that, because we know the whole story. And this Old Testament story kind of parallels the Christmas story and what it means to come to the table. It's the story of Mephibosheth. Now, if you can't say that five times fast, you're like everyone else. It's a hard name to say. If you say, you know, whatever, call him Phoebe or Sheth or whatever you want to call him. Come up with your own bow if you want. It'd be real simple. The thing is, Mephibosheth is a really interesting story in 2 Samuel chapter 9. I encourage you to go read it. I've edited a few little phrases out here and there just to shorten it for our sake as we go through it together today. But all the most important stuff is here as we look at it. But in this story, it starts with one simple phrase. It introduces us to some characters we got to talk about for a minute. And it says, one day David asked, is anyone in Saul's family still alive? Anyone to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake? And so right off the bat, we have three notable characters. David, who is the king of Israel that succeeded Saul. Now, Saul would have preferred that one of his sons became king. That's the way it worked, right? His son was supposed to become king. He did not. Part of that is because, as you see, Saul was the first king of Israel, and he constantly disobeyed God. He had a pattern of disobedience, and God did not honor that with his succession of his line. In fact, it ended with Saul because of his disobedience. And David was given the kingdom. So Saul didn't really like David, tried to kill him many times. They weren't good friends. But Jonathan, Saul's son, was a close friend of David's and a special person in his life. And Saul and Jonathan were close when they could be, but as you can imagine, when Saul's father, the king, wanted to kill him, it sort of drove a little bit of a distance between them. And so, which is why he doesn't actually know if any one of Jonathan's sons or children is still alive. And so the story goes on, and we meet the next important character, and that is Mephibosheth. First it's Ziba, which is sort of a man named Ziba is summoned by David, who had been one of Saul's servants. I think that's important to note, that he had been one of Saul's servants, now serving King David. And the king then asked him, is anyone still alive from Saul's family? Now, if you've watched any dramatic history or you know anything about the stories of the past, kings tend to not want to keep alive the heirs to the throne of the previous kings, right? So if you have someone who might have a legitimate claim to the throne, you might actually prefer to eliminate that threat to your reign. And so Ziba, as a former servant of Saul's, may be going, David wants to know if there's anyone alive from Saul's family. But he says, if so, I want to show God's kindness to them. Now, we don't know if Ziba believed him or not, but when he says kindness, he's actually saying, I want to show chesed, that word we talked about in the summer that has to do with commitment and hope and a trusting relationship of just sharing life together. It's a very, very powerful word. So it seems like Ziba believes because he tells him. Right? He didn't hide that Jonathan had a son. He says, yes, one of Jonathan's sons is still alive. He's crippled in both feet. Where is he? The king asked. In Lodabar, Ziba told him, at the home of Machir, son of Ammiel. Now, in studying this passage, I've never heard of Lodabar. I didn't know. But there's something interesting happening here. Is Ziba is saying, first of all, he's saying he's crippled. In other words, you don't have to worry about this guy. He can't even walk, right? And then he says, he's from Lodabar. And interestingly, Lodabar translates as no thing or no word. In other words, it's kind of like Ziba's saying to the king, perhaps, this guy's from nowhere. He's of no consequence. He's not important. In fact, he's crippled. You don't need, like, he's no threat to you, King David. It seems like he's telling him the truth, but he's also carefully saying, don't worry about this guy. He's in Lodabar. He's from nowhere. He's from nothing. You've got nothing to worry about. And so the story goes on, and we see now Mephibosheth is brought into the story. It says, David sent for him and brought him from Machir's home. His name was Mephibosheth. He was Jonathan's son and Saul's grandson. And so now we're introduced to Mephibosheth. But let's look at a little bit of Mephibosheth's backstory for a minute. Because if you think about it, and we have this little, well, I'll share with you in a minute, we have this little kind of clip about what happened to him when he was younger and when this all went down. Because many years ago, see, Mephibosheth's grown up now, but many years ago, he was 5 years old when his father and grandfather were killed. And this grieved David very much, but David didn't know about him back then. But the bottom story is that Mephibosheth's life was not going to plan. It was not going according to plan. How many of you would say your life didn't always turn out the plan you had for it, right? I mean, we heard a powerful testimony, thank you for that, earlier, about how life doesn't always go the way we hoped it would. I could share many stories of times in my life where I thought life was going to go one way and it took a radical turn, you know, and sometimes those turns feel like bad things and feel like difficult things, and sometimes they just are, but there's other times where sometimes I just didn't know God's plan for the future and I didn't know where he had been leading me, and it felt like things were going poorly, but in fact, as long as I was continuing in obedience to him, it would work out in the end. But life wasn't going to plan. In fact, Mephibosheth, at 5 years old, lost his father and his grandfather, who was the king, which meant that there was a complete and total regime change in that moment. He was no longer part of the ruling family. He went from being, you know, this five-year-old in the king's family at the king's table to being an utter outcast, not just an outcast, but would fear for his life. And you'll find out in that moment at 5 years old, He was crippled because life wasn't going to plan, but also the people that he trusted let him down. The people that he trusted. Look in 2 Samuel 4:4, we find out what happened. It says, Saul's son Jonathan had a son named Mephibosheth who was crippled as a child. He was 5 years old when the report came from Jezreel that Saul and Jonathan had been killed in battle. When the child's nurse heard the news, she picked him up and fled, probably out of fear for both of their lives. But as she hurried away, she dropped him and he became crippled. Now, I don't know about you, but when you carry a child, and when an adult is carrying a child, there's this, actually, one of the things I experienced in the very first moments of Naya's birth was this this incredible sense of protection, and this instinct came over me where I would do anything to protect this child. And it's carried on, obviously, through with Elias, but I never forget the change that came over me when at the birth of our first child. I would do anything to protect this child. And even, in this circumstance, this nanny, a nanny would have been very close to the child, would have cared for him almost like a mother. She's the one who causes him harm. She's the one who drops him. The people he should have been able to trust let him down. Now, when I was, when Naya was about 5 years old, same age as this, we were actually at a production called Jingle Jam. We're going to do the same one here just in a few weeks. You should go. It's a lot of fun. And we were doing it at the church I was in at the time. And I had seats right down in the front row we were helping out a little bit beforehand, and Naya and I were going down the front row, and it's a big auditorium. It seats 1,600 people with no windows, and when they turn out the lights, the room went pitch black. That's how it worked. And so Naya and I, I'm gonna show you, we're coming down the side here, this aisle, and we're going to take our seat, and I'm carrying Naya. She's a 5-year-old, she's pretty good size, she's not a little baby, and I'm carrying her over, and the lights go out. And I know my seat's right there. I'm on the corner in the front row, right there, but the lights went out, and I'm like, oh, I just a second ago, I saw where the seat was. So I just continued, and I went, and I sat right about here. And if you can see that, I did not sit. I actually sat just on the edge of the chair, just enough that I sat down confidently. I'm like, I know where I'm going. I shouldn't have. And I fell. I just went right down hard immediately. And as I was falling, it's like slow motion, talk about that. I remember it clear as a bell. I knew Naya's head was going toward the concrete floor, and I was not going to let her fall that way. And so I immediately protected Naya, pulled her up, turned so that I would hit the floor first. And in doing so, this is the comical part of it, as I pulled her up, she's startled. We're in the dark, and she's like, what's going on? I'm flying through the air, and my dad's, it feels like he's throwing me. What's going on? My glasses start to fall off my face because they're too loose on my head. And as they're falling, she kicks up, kicks my glasses right into my eye, and I scratched my cornea. It was a painful 2 weeks of healing after that. But the bottom line is I landed on the floor. Naya was safe. I took an injury. Naya was fine. I was sore and I was hurting, but I did everything I could to protect my baby girl. And that's the thing. We would do anything to protect those that we can, but sometimes, even in our best case scenarios, we fail those around us at times. And this is a story where someone who should have had, Mephibosheth's best interest at heart, should have protected him and taken the fall herself, she let him down. We don't know if she fell on him. We don't know how he was crippled. We don't know if it was her fault or something. We may get to heaven one day and she'll be like, you should not have been bad-mouthing me. It wasn't my fault. Maybe she'll be mad at me, but it doesn't matter. The point is that in life, sometimes people let us down. And we should try not to let people down, but the reality is that I've let people down, you've let people down, we will all let each other down. We need to show each other so much grace and mercy and hope and forgiveness in the world. So, even those who've let you down, show them grace, show them mercy, because you've also been guilty. All fall sin of the glory of God. We've all made mistakes. The thing is, Mephibosheth is someone who's experienced this in big ways. He was, and not only that, he's now in danger. See, that summons to the king, he may have been told the king wants to show you kindness, but would he have believed it? I don't know. I suspect that leaving home, he was kind of saying goodbye to his family, not even sure if he'd ever see them again. He left his family in Lodabar, goes to the king as a crippled man. But as a five-year-old, you know, he had nowhere to go. He lives in Lodabar. He's in a place of no consequence or no thing. And now, as a grown-up, you know, he realized even if he had somewhere to go, the king now summons him, and he's in danger. The truth is, in our lives, we all face danger. Our lives, there's no such thing. Safety is an illusion. Like, okay, I get it. We can sort of control our circumstances and protect ourselves to a certain degree. But the reality is that we all live with the constant threat of life and death. And the you know, we're in these frail human bodies. We never know what tomorrow may bring. We all live in a constant state of danger, like Mephibosheth, knowing that anything can happen anytime. And so we're like Mephibosheth in this story. And what happens next is that he came to David and he bowed low to the ground in deep respect. He probably had no idea what David was going to do. And David said, "Greetings, Mephibosheth." And Mephibosheth replied, "I am your servant." Making clear, "I am no threat to you, king. I do not want your kingdom." And I love what David says. He says, "Don't be afraid." David said, "I intend to show kindness to you because of my promise to your father, Jonathan. I will give you all the property that once belonged to your grandfather, Saul, and you will eat here with me at the king's table." The word kindness here, again, is chesed. It is a commitment to him because of what his father meant to David. And so the story ends with this beautiful ending. It says, from that time on, Mephibosheth ate regularly at David's table like one of the king's own sons. He's invited into the family. And Mephibosheth, who was crippled in both feet, lived in Jerusalem and ate regularly at the king's table, which means his family, everyone would come to join him and eat at the king's table. And so what we find here in this story is a story of real, genuine hope. Because this echoes the story of Jesus. This is exactly what we need to think about as we go into Christmas, because we are like Mephibosheth. All of us, not just you, not just me, everyone in this world is like him. We've all experienced life that has not gone to plan. We all have experienced people who have let us down, and we all have been in a situation where we have nowhere to run and nowhere to turn, and we are all in Lodabar. Nowhere. But what God does is he invites us to the king's table where we find something, not nothing. We find meaning and purpose at the king's table. In fact, the king wants to give you a future and a hope. When we come to the king's table, we experience what it means in Jeremiah 29:11, where it says, "I know the plans I have for you." We know the Bible teaches that God has a plan for each and every one of us. Every single life, not just you, not just everyone on this planet, God has a plan for their lives, for a future and a hope. Plans not for disaster. He wants to give us something of meaning and value. And you know, if there's anything worth pursuing in this life, it's God's will for your life, because that is where we find the meaningfulness of life. And so I want to say to you this Christmas that the best gift you can give yourself and the best gift you can give your family is to be in the center of God's will for you. The minute we walk apart and we leave the king's table and we do our own thing and we find our own way and we find our own meaning, we find our own purpose in life, and we don't follow God's will for our life, we are robbing ourselves of joy and hope and peace in life, and we're also robbing those we love of the experience of the king's table. And the other thing the king's table invites you to is family, not fear. Romans 8:15 says, "You have not received a spirit of fear," right, "that makes you fearful slaves. You have received God's spirit when he adopted you as his own children." Just like Mephibosheth, God adopts us as his children. We have been invited to the Lord's table as his own sons, just like Mephibosheth. And now we call him Abba, Father, which is this word in Greek, which meant daddy. It was just like, it was a informal greeting, which means you can be on a very comfortable relational terms with God. It is, I don't know about you, but I've sat at formal tables. Our table at home, not so formal. we don't have we keep it pretty casual at our table. And I feel like God is saying, you know what, you can be you. You can be with me. You don't have to be afraid. You can just be who you are. And in fact, we hear the same message in the Christmas story that David said to Mephibosheth. He says, don't be afraid. In the Christmas story, the angel said to the shepherds in the field, they said, don't be afraid. I have good news of great joy to bring you. And so the amazing news today is that today can be your last day in Lodabar. For anyone, we are all invited to leave Lodabar, to leave nothing, to leave a place of no consequence, to leave this place where there's no thing or no word for us, and we can humbly take our seat at the king's table. And so today should be and ought to be a day where we celebrate. Advent is about celebrating that we have left Lodabar and we have come to the king's table, because at the king's table, everyone is welcome. Everyone is invited. In 2 Peter 1:3, it says, everything that goes into a life of pleasing God has been miraculously given to us by getting to know personally and intimately, like Abba Father, the one who invited us to God, the best invitation we ever received. I've had some good invitations. I've been invited to some special things. I've been invited to special weddings and celebrations, and I've invited people to celebrate with me at different times, and an invitation has power and meaning. I'm going to invite the team to come up, and we're going to sing in just a moment, but you've been invited to the king's table. The problem with an invitation is that it requires a response and an acceptance. You can be invited to the table, but if you don't choose to show up and sit down, you'll never experience what the table can bring. And so when God invites us to his table, you have to realize that an invitation requires an acceptance. And so it's a simple, and just so you know, this acceptance is a daily acceptance. The gospel is a daily thing. The gospel is a moment by moment thing. We don't accept Christ in one moment, in one decisive moment, and then that's it. You have to accept Christ's gospel truth over you daily. You have to accept you have to sit down at the king's table daily. You have to sit down and say, I am a child of God daily. And then the beautiful thing is that we have the opportunity to invite others to join us at the king's table. In fact, we are given authority to make our table the king's table. Look at Luke 22. It says, now I confer on you the royal authority my Father conferred on me, so you can eat and drink at my table in my kingdom and be strengthened as you take up responsibilities among the congregations of God's people. Do you see that? God has said to you, you have the same authority as me to invite people to this table. You've not merely been invited to the king's table. You've been given authority to bring anyone and everyone to the table with you. And so your table at home, your table at work, your table in the cafeteria at school, wherever you find yourself, you can make that the king's table by being a representative of the king. And so this season of Advent, will you invite people to your table? Maybe do you know someone who needs to know what it means to find hope? Maybe they just need to sit at your table and experience what it means to be part of a family, not fear. Maybe they just need someone to welcome them in. So this is what our invitation looks like. And then we'll sing. It says, you are hereby formally and eternally invited, an invitation you must accept, to the king's table and family for all eternity, adopted into the royal family, granted full authority as a child of the king, to invite whomever you wish to join us at our infinite table. This table doesn't get any bigger. It can't put leaves in it, can't expand it. This is it. But God's table is infinite. There's no end to its size. In fact, it includes everywhere we are and everywhere we go. And so we respond in faith, we receive his gift, and then we bring others to the table of hope this season. I pray that you will ask God to reveal to you people that need hope. But maybe today you just need to sit down and enjoy the table God has set before you. And then when you have a chance, offer that same love to others. Father, you are good. We thank you for your hope and your peace and your love and your joy, and that you invite us to your table. We accept this invitation graciously, humbly, thanking you for this free gift that you've given us that we don't deserve, like Mephibosheth. It doesn't make sense, God, but you give it to us freely. And so we thank you for all you have done, and we offer it freely to those around us in Jesus' name.